This is episode 33 of the Reading Coves podcast. If you're a book lover who may be interested in joining our online book club, please visit our website at thereadingcove.com. For August 2013, we're discussing Portrait in Sepia by Isabel Allende. So hi, I'm Melania in Florida.
I'm Roberta in Georgia.
And Roberta and I are here today to chat about the Reading Cove's 153rd pick, Portrait in Sepia by Isabel Allende, and it was chosen by Cove member Miriam. So what did you think about this book, Roberta?
Well, apparently, as far as Cove members go, I was in the minority because I liked it. I gave it a B. So, you know, probably would have given it even a B plus. If, you know, like I said, there were some places that where you kind of got too much detail and plodded along. But for the most part, I really enjoyed it. I had read Daughter of Fortune like a good many years ago when it first came out and was an Oprah book since it, you know, it was hyped. And I liked that too.
Yeah, I tried to read it then too.
Well, I mean, it's I think it's one of those books you're either going to love it or not. You know?
Right.
It seems like I've said in our Cove discussions that it seemed more and more I've been reading historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that because I've, you know, it seemed like I've learned more about world history in the past few years than I did, you know, years ago when I was actually in school.
Right.
So this book, I had in the Daughter of Fortune, I'd learned a good bit about the life in San Francisco and all, but I learned a little bit more from, you know, different points of view. But the biggest thing is I had virtually nothing about Chile. And, you know, even though this was just like a certain amount of time in Chile, it was very fascinating to me because I hadn't realized there'd been like this other war and a civil war and everything and what life was like during that time in Chile.
Right.
So it was very eye-opening to me and very educational. And that's what I like a lot about historical fiction is that you can learn new and exciting things, and it's not dry as toast like some of these nonfiction history books.
Well, I would have to be one of the dry of toast people because I found this book dry as toast. I think the writing style of this author is just not for me. And I understand they're translated.
Right.
So I don't know if that has something to do with it, but I had the same problem when I tried to read Daughter of Fortune when Oprah had picked it. It was just very boring and I couldn't get into it or get, you know, have any interest in the story. And the same thing happened here. The first few pages were all about a bed being shipped from Florence. And I think that just set the stage for me. That set the tone. It was just like, are you serious? I don't care about this ornate bed. You know, it's like, okay, you know, we can, I don't know. The writing style just isn't for me. I found it dull. And I thought the title, Portrait in Sepia, it's like, that's exactly how the narrative read to me. Colorless.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and I can see your point of view, but, you know, everybody's going to come to, you know, any kind of book with different expectations. And that's why there's so many different genres and now even subgenres out there to appeal to different people. So, and I know what you feel like, because there's been things, you know, usually I don't give up on a book, but there's been books, you know, more recently that I've had to give up on because it just, you know, wasn't for me. It wasn't necessarily that it was bad writing or not very professional writing, but it just didn't engage me. It just didn't resonate with me. So I can understand how you feel. If something doesn't grab you in the beginning of it, you're probably never going to really get engaged by it and finish the whole book.
Yeah, and you know, I have to really have an interest in the story and the characters and what's going on. And I found that the way it was told was very rambly. It's like she would be talking about this and then go over there. It was like scatterbrain type of thing. And it was also more, it's like it's first person narrative from Aurora's perspective. She's telling you the story. But it's like she's telling you things and it's not really shown. It's like she's just telling you. And that started to become really apparent to me. It's like it didn't help me become engaged. It didn't bring it all to life like her grandmother and, you know, everything she was talking about.
I think probably the characters intrigue me almost as much as the learning of the history.
Right.
They were, you know, they were different. They were from different areas, and you know, they had their own little problems and flaws, and you know, backstories. So you kind of learn these people and from different cultures and different eras, that things haven't really changed that much. We're all pretty much the same type of people.
We, right.
Even if you haven't done these, you know, things yourself, that you've seen it go on around you. Things don't change much. Unfortunately, people don't always learn from history, and they end up repeating it, you know, to have tragic or unhappy endings a lot of time.
Right. Well, I wish I could have had the reading experience with it that you had.
Well,
to really be able to appreciate, you know, learning about Chile and all the different things that, you know, you're talking about from a historical context. But I just think the way it was told didn't do it for me.
Well, yeah, and like I said, I can see that because, you know, different writing styles are going to engage different people. That,
right.
As you said, if it's not something that...
get your interest.
It gets your interest. That it doesn't matter how well it's written or not written. It's just not going to keep your interest, and you don't, you know, it gets to be too much of a chore. You don't want to plow on through.
Invest the time.
Right, yeah.
Because that's how, when I was, you know, years ago when I was a little bit younger, I would always feel obligated to finish a book. So even if I wasn't enjoying it, I would still feel like, you know, I have to finish. And I know a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah,
But I've given up that feeling.
I
have so many books to read now that I just realized that I just can't spend the time anymore on something that it doesn't get me by 50 or 100 pages.
Right, right. I agree on that. Yeah, you know, that the older you get, you think, well, you know, there's too many good books out
there.
I want to get to, and this may be somebody else's cup of tea, but it's not mine.
Exactly.
So I'm going to, you know, move on. Yeah.
And with the picks, with the group picks, I really do my due diligence because I want to be able to talk about it with everybody. So I have more of a drive to want to finish the group pick.
Right.
So I'll give it 100 pages, you know, instead of 50. I'll say, okay, I'm going to. But then it's like, okay, this is, you know, torture.
Yeah.
I'm not enjoying this. So I just have to give it up. And that's what happened with this book.
So, I mean, from what you did read, were there, like you said, you didn't always care for the characters, but was there any particular character that appealed to you or that made you mad or have any kind of strong emotions?
Well, I know that her grandmother, I didn't care for her much. And Aurora, even. The fact that the way she was telling it,
uh-huh,
was just so matter of fact, it was coming across. I would have preferred if it was written in a way that brought you back into that time instead of just having her recount her childhood and how, and you know, her relationship with what was her name? Paulina. And you know, all the things her grandmother did and all the other people, but I really wasn't liking either one of them much. And
yep,
they seemed to be the focal characters,
from what I
had read.
Yeah, I think they're the two biggest, characters as far as the helping the plot and, you know, moving ahead and just, you know, the ones that you learn the most about. Since,
mm-hmm,
you know, for Aurora, really, you know, she didn't remember that much about her parents, not as much as she would have, because, you know, she did spend the better part of her life with Paulina.
Right.
But, you know, Paulina was kind of, you know, she had like two sides to her, I thought. So it wasn't that she didn't give off the warm fuzzies. She was more the cold prickly for sure. But she, you know, she'd had a rough time, but I think she made the best of what she had. Now, she had plenty of, you know, financial resources. You know, she was very rich for that time even, and she was smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was the one that took care of the finances and seemed to have, she would have been a great stockbroker nowadays because she, she had this intuitive feeling about what would, you know, be good and what wouldn't work. So, you know, she had done well for herself, but at the same time, she just seemed like she had a hard time, you know, reaching out and having emotional ties with those you'd think she'd love, you know, that, I mean, granted her husband had, you know, had this, you know, fling and all, but that wasn't that unusual. Unfortunately, still isn't that unusual. But even right. then, it was more accepted that, you know, you married more for like families or you know, financial things or whatever. But so you have to kind of forgive your husband of some of his little indiscretions. But with her, that you know, even it, you could see how strong she was, because even though she mourned, she did pretty well even without her husband. In fact, maybe she did even a little bit better after he was gone in the long run. You know, she was able to move on and get on with her life. And then, you know, most people would get a certain point in their life and they wouldn't want to go back to their original country and start over again. But she did. And she kept coming up with new ideas to do different things. So I had to, even if I didn't like her a whole lot, I had to admire her, because, you know, she was highly intelligent and what you say, she had a lot of gumption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think one of the main things that turned me off right when I stopped reading it was when somebody died and she was just like so happy about it. And I was just like, okay. I don't want to read any more about this woman. She's, you know, yeah, Paulina, she was just so happy when this woman, Summers or somebody died.
Yeah.
I was just like, ugh.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, she wasn't always a very nice person to other people,
no,
but she could take care of herself, and she, even though she didn't show it in a normal way, she did, you know, love Aurora in her own way. And you know, provided her a wonderful upbringing, and you know, kept her away from some of the other difficult things in life, because Aurora never even really knew that Mateus was, or how you say it, was her real father until much later.
Exactly.
They'd kind of protected her from the, you know, bad things in her life. So, you know, you have to give her that, because the Aurora, even for those days, she could have been highly traumatized with all the things that, you know, went on around her. You know, it was bad enough that, you know, she never knew her mother, but, you know, then to find out her father was this, you know, not so nice guy, then that was tougher. It wasn't until he was in his final, you know, phase of his illness.
His life
that she got to know him. And that he could even admit, you know, to her and to himself that he was her father, because he was trying to deny it from the start. But that's not that unusual, even nowadays, unfortunately.
Right.
So, but I said, but, you know, I just like the part in San Francisco, you get a little more, because when I read The Daughters of Fortune, they had told, you knew a little bit more about Aurora's parents. They, you know, kind of went... And it was, I think it was good the author used the first part for people that may have never read Daughter of Fortune. It could kind of bring you up to speed about who these people were and how they related and things that happened that, you know, would have an impact on, you know, Aurora, that she would be the main focus in this book, but how these other past things had an effect on her one way or the other.
And how does this book connect with Daughter of Fortune?
Well, that her Aurora's parents, you know, there's more about them both individually and together in Daughter of Fortune.
Okay.
You find out more about how her father came to this, you know, about his first wife, because she was one of these little bitty, you know, Chinese women that in the time when they was towards the end of when they were doing foot binding.
Uh-huh.
So she was real fragile. So when she died, you weren't too surprised, because, you know, those people had that foot binding that made them susceptible to all kinds of things.
Right.
They weren't real strong. They were fragile. And then you learned a little bit more about her mother. I don't know if you'd read this part that they alluded to about how she had run away and come to San Francisco. Also how they ended up meeting, because both of their backgrounds were totally different. Because he'd come from China and she'd come from South America, but they ended up, you know, meeting.
Uh-huh.
Because they were both, you know, immigrating to the United States.
Right.
So it just pretty much told their stories, the two of their stories. the other thing too, I say it was sort of different that you didn't find out for the longest time, but I kind of had a suspicion about why Aurora was having all these nightmares. You know, mm-hmm. you didn't find out that it related back to her grandfather's death. That, but you think maybe part of that they would say now that was kind of like PS, what was it, the post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that she was having that. Because she had suppressed this memory of her grandfather being brutally killed while she was right there.
Wow.
Even though she'd suppressed it, that kind of worked into how, you know, she was as she grew up, too, I believe.
Right.
But I said, then the poor, you know, even poor Aurora towards the end, like I said, I don't know if you got into that, but... that with her, when she got married, you know, that was another thing where I think the marriage was almost more arranged and she didn't realize what she was getting herself into after she found out, you know, that her husband really never should have married her in the first place because, you know, he loved somebody else. You know, they didn't know it, but she followed him one night and caught them, you know, outside. So,
oh. So this was a pretty dramatic story.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, especially for her that, you know, she had lost her mother at birth and then, you know, her grandfather was killed and her grandmother felt like, well, she couldn't really take care of her. So Paulina had tried to, you know, get her before and they had problems. But then the grandmother's coming and saying, well, OK, you take care of her because, you know, you have plenty of means to take care of her, and I really don't. You know,
right.
So like I said, and then, like I said, she gets into this bad marriage. And then back then it was, you know, especially with the Catholic country out there, you couldn't even think about getting a divorce, no matter what the reason was.
The circumstance. Yeah.
Right. So basically she just had to, you know, run away and disappear. So, there was a good bit of drama, though. Like you said, it kind of in places it kind of gave you a little bit more detail than you really wanted. You know, it was good to have some to, you know, make it more dramatic, but it probably could have been more tightly edited in several places.
Notably for me, the beginning.
the beginning could have been narrowed down. Like you said, that bed thing could have been like a few paragraphs instead of a few pages. So.
Right. And then, you know, as it went on to really draw you in.
Right.
Because I find... what I'm finding more and more lately is if I don't connect emotionally, then I don't really have any interest in the characters or the story. So
yeah.
I'm more and more I need to have some kind of emotional connection to whoever's telling the story or whatever it's about. And if
right.
that doesn't happen, then I find my mind wandering. I find myself having a hard time concentrating on it, focusing on it.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's not like our last pick, the Someone Knows My Name, where I felt like pulled in from the very beginning.
Immediately, almost. Immediately. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an emotional thing more so than even, you know, oh, this is cool. I never knew this. But, you know, it's still this emotional bond of what happened to
exactly
the people. Life's too short to force yourself to read something, regardless of what the reason is.
Yeah. So the Cove members, I think... Nancy has given it a C-, so I guess she was able to finish it. There were several did not finish, DNFs.
Right.
Myself, Cheryl, I think, chucked it. Nicole, Amanda just posted and said that she wasn't really enjoying it. She started it, but it wasn't really holding her interest.
Right.
Can't remember, but, you know, I think it's overall... a thumbs down.
Yeah, this wasn't one of the more popular books, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Especially after the last one got, you know, such high praise, but...
Yeah, the last one was our first A in, like, years.
Oh, yeah. Well, and deservedly so.
Yeah. So you will definitely be reading more by this author?
Eventually, once I work down, you know, some of these other to-be-read books.
Yeah, because she does have... a lot of other books. All right, so that is our take on Portrait in Sepia by Isabella Allende. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And as always, please continue to leave us your comments. Let us know if you read this book and what you think. Stay tuned for our September episode. We will be discussing Touch and Go by Lisa Gardner. See you all next time. Bye.
Bye.